I'm her father.
Now I get it.
Okay. I'm going to start with the very basics. Some of these halachas are not necessarily, you know, you're not the ones going to be dealing with these halachas at this point in your life. Some point in your life you will. Hopefully by then you'll you know, have had a lot of other training in it besides. And imagine some of you have training in this area, the areas of Basar B'chol, of kashrus in the kitchen, and from home already. I just want to give some understanding of some of the concepts, maybe point out a few halachas. I don't want to pask of you because you're not the ones that are being pasking. You're shyless at home. You can just maybe raise the question to your parents. Why are we being so machmer? Because Rav Rangel said his mutter. Okay, so the issue of the Torah says that a person cannot have Basa B'cholov together. The Torah writes the Isra Basa B'cholov in the language of Bishul. The Torah writes it three times in the language of Bishul. So I'll understand that even though it's written three times, one is for the Isra of cooking. There's an Isra of cooking Basa B'cholov together, whether you're going to eat it or not. There's an Isra of eating it together. And there's an Isra of having Hanoah from it. So a person can't go over to this Basa B'cholov and take a shmak away. Ah, that smells good. Can't have a no. The Torah writes the Isra of Loisavashal Gadi B'chalevi Mori. Even the Isra Achil is written in the language of Bishul to indicate that the Isra of the Torah is only if there's so much, there's going to be cooked, they're going to be cooked together. The Chachamim came along and said, you know, you can't put them together even if they're not cooked. But if a person, on a derisa level, if a person would take kosher meat and take kosher cheese and put it together in a sandwich, he did not do an issur d'oraisa if he ate that. An issur d'rabbanan. A person will cook the two together, that'd be an issur d'oraisa. The issur of the Torah of Basar B'cholov, the issur of the Torah we're talking about right now, is when you're cooking it together, there has to be a transfer of taste between the two of them. So for example, if a person would cook a large amount of meat with a very minimal amount of milk in it, it would not be an Isra Basar B'cholov because the milk is so small that it's going to become negligible and nullified in the meat which is there. What is the amount to which the Chachamim said? That is one that you've heard of your Batal B'shishim. It's Batal 1/60. So if you'd have a very large pot of cholent, which is, you know, fleishigs, and a drop of milk falls in, there's 60 times more of the meat or liquid which is there, not necessarily the meat, but everything which is there. So the milk is going to dissipate, it's going to become negligible, it is nullified, and there's no issur at all, deraisa or derabanan, of eating that food. So taste is going to be significant. In halacha, there has to be a transfer of taste between the fleishes to the milchus or the milchus to the fleishes. What are the ways which halacha recognizes are the possibility of a transfer of taste? So the obvious cases where you're going to be cooking together, milking meat together, there's a transfer of taste. Halacha takes it a step further and says, not only is a problem of transfer of taste when you actually have milk and meat together, but you're going to have possibly the flavor of the milk or the flavor of the meat in the walls of the pot. When a person cooks in a pot, a certain amount of flavor is transferred into the walls of the pot, and now that theoretically could come out of the walls of the pot next time you cook something into it and go from the walls into the next food. That's a form of a transfer of taste. There are basically three ways where taste can be transferred. There's direct contact is one way that taste can be transferred. That'll be direct contact either of milchus and fleishigs, actual milchus and fleishigs, or of the pot to the other item, and there's a flavor in the pot, so there's direct contact. The second way that there's a possibility of a transfer of taste is what's known as recha, which means smell. And we'll talk about those halachas. And the third area where it's possible to have a transfer of a transfer of taste is what's known as zeya, which is steam. So whenever we're dealing with a kashrus question, we want to know, is there going to be any type of direct contact between the two? The milk is to the fleishigs. Is there going to be possibly they're both sharing the smell from one, the transfer of smell from one to the other, and possibly the transfer of taste from one to the other through the medium of steam? Yeah, we're good so far. No big chidushim at this point in time. Right. I do want to point out that the transfer of flavor through steam. In other words, you go to your science class and they tell you, well, you know, the meat remains the meat and what comes out is just the water vapor and it's just the H2O molecules which are coming out and the meat remains behind. there is such an argument in halacha. Some poskim raise such a question, but the general consensus of poskim is that that's not how halacha looks at it. We look at it as there's going to be actual milchiks or fleishiks transferred through the medium of steam. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I want to focus today mostly on Recha and Zeya. But I want to do Recha first. Recha is smaller. We'll cover Recha, and then we'll talk about Zeya more at length. I do want to talk about the halachas of the transfer of taste through direct contact, at least when it comes to regards to pots, etc. We're going to stay away from direct contact and milchiks and fleishiks. But you do have the issue of the transfer of taste through direct contact. Theoretically, you're putting something fleishik into a milchik pot. That happens sometimes. A person puts something milchik in a milchik pot, and by mistake puts a fleishik spoon and stirs it. So there are many scenarios where you're going to have a transfer of taste through direct contact, the contact being over here, the spoon to the food. What about, so I'm not going to go into that. That, you know, you're familiar with that exists. We don't have an opportunity to cover all of that today. I do want to point out, what about if two pots touch? Because that's one of the areas which we are going to touch on, pun intended. What about if two pots touch? So if two pots touch, as long as there's no, for them to flavor to transfer from one pot, which is clean, to another pot, which is clean, there has to be a medium of transfer. The medium of transfer has to be moisture. So we say that you could, direct contact allows the transfer of taste. So if you have something actually milchic, you know, a person puts down his fleishig, and the next thing he knows, he adds it's there, somebody, one little kid comes by and drops their piece of cheese onto the fleishigs. That's a problem. There's direct contact between the fleishigs, the meat, and the cheese. You know, there was no liquid there, but that doesn't help you. How much has to be dealt with, that you have to ask your rabbi. But in a case where there's two pots which touch, as long as there's no liquid there between the two pots, it is not a problem. I wouldn't tell you to do vachachila, but if that happens, and you know that both are dry, it is mutter. It's not any problem with it. Okay, now, let's go back to the issues of Recha. So Chazal said that Mor has an argument whether Recha is milsahi or Recha lav milsahi, whether smell is an issue or not. In Halacha, smell is an issue only under three circumstances. We deal with smell as a problem l'chadchila and not b'di'evet. Number one, you have to know that the Recha is an issue l'chadchila and not b'di'evet. The only exception to where Recha is halacha in the b'di'evet case, you cannot do it, even b'di'evet is a problem, is in a scenario where you're dealing with Yisuri Hano, which you're not dealing with in most cases. You're dealing with in your kitchen, you're not dealing with Yisuri Hano. An example of that would be if you're walking down the street and there is this space of Avodah Zorah and they're burning incense there to their Avodah Zorah. You can't have a noah from that incense. You cannot smell it. It's also to smell it. So that's a problem. You know, a person is walking down past the donut factory and it's Pesach and there's this tremendous overpowering smell of chametz like donuts coming out into the street. You should not take a whiff of those yishmak. You should not take a whiff of that. If you could possibly go down a different street, you should do so. But yes. Right, that's true, but I would not advise you to put something which is tray from your mouth and tempt yourself and then take it out.
Well, yeah, you just said walking past it and smelling it, you shouldn't.
I understand. This is, again, but the limit of tempting doesn't apply when you actually put it. I'm getting there. I know what I'm saying, right? Temptation has a limit. In other words, you say, I would like to have that, but you don't take it into your hand.
Yeah, I know, obviously, but you're just...
Okay, so smelling in halacha, when it's prohibited in hanor, is the same thing as taking something in your hand.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Better question.
How do you know it's a better question? Maybe it's not a better question.
I'm just saying, I have a question.
Okay, yes.
Let's say you're walking in the mall, and it's just not kosher because it's not kosher, not because it's... It doesn't have ashkacha, it's not like pig or meat and milk. It's just like auntie's pretzels, you know, those really good smelling pretzels.
You're allowed to smell them.
And they smell so good.
Don't do it on Pesach, though. Okay.
Are you only talking about Pesach? You can smell pig. You just can't smell that milk and meat.
Right. Okay, the Isser HaNoah, okay, that's a good, I made an assumption, let me explain something. I made an assumption, I said Isser HaNoah. There are certain things where there's a prohibition of getting benefit from them, not eating them. Basar b'cholov is something which, once it's actual basar b'cholov, you cannot get benefit from it. Chazer, you're allowed to smell chazer. You can allow to smell treif of donuts, not just not on Pesach.
When I smell things, I don't get done with budget.
Okay, then
so
fine.
I mean,
okay, so if you don't have a problem with it, then I don't have a problem with it either. Yes.
So would you not be allowed to eat at like a mall or somewhere like cafeteria if there's milk and meat mixed together in the cafeteria?
Maybe, you know, we're moving away from this. Let's stick to the smell issue, and we'll deal with smells, and then maybe if we have time, we would get to that. That there is an issue that the Chachamim were concerned about eating when there are other foods there. Possibly you might be tempted in certain cases. It's a problem. In certain cases, it's not a problem. It's a valid question, but I'm not going to go there right now. Okay, so where is Recha an issue? Recha is an issue, it's not Isuri Anoa. So your person has milchiks, and he wants. So the smell of milchiks, is that going to create a problem together with fleishiks? It will. You cannot cook in an oven. Since it is an enclosed area of the oven, you cannot cook together milchiks and fleishiks at the same time. There we say the halacha is that's a chachila. You cannot have a situation where you're having milchiks, the smell of milchiks transferring to the fleishiks, and the fleishiks to the milchiks. You cannot do that. If both are covered, that would not be a problem. Reich would not be a problem. There might be other issues. But again, the issue of a transfer of smell is only it's in an enclosed area, and that's also the chachila. But yeah, but if you did it, it would not be awesome.
So how long would you have to wait in order to have the fleishiks?
We're going
to
get there. That's where we're going. Now, there is one other way where, in this halacha of Recha, we said there's three issues. The one is Isuri Hanoa. The second one is cooking the two together. So it's also lechachilo, means you cannot do it. But yeah, if you did it, it's going to be mutter. If you would bake a bread, now let's take the situation, the person would have milchiks cooking in the oven, and it's open milchiks, so there's a smell coming out of it. And a person would be baking something, parv, at the same time. So bread, whatever it is. You cannot eat that bread together with fleishiks. Because even though there's no transit, there's no steam, and there's no contact, there was smell. And I cannot go lechatchila now and eat it together with something which is fleishik. That's still considered lechatchila. So I cannot take my bread, which is pariv, ostensibly pariv, because it didn't have any contact with the milchik, and it didn't have any steam from the milchik. But even so, you cannot go to chachil and have it together with fleishes. So the only scenario which you'd be allowed to have it, let's say, with fleishes, you would have a fleishig of food, which you have no other bread available, let's say, and you cannot eat this food without bread, which is almost very, very uncommon, such a thing. Right? If that'd be the scenario, that'd call be a bit yavin avimut. But otherwise, you cannot take anything which is cooked together in an oven with milchiks and have it together with fleishiks, or vice versa, something which is cooked in the oven together with fleishiks and have it with milchiks. Okay, that is the second area where Recha applies. The third area where Recha applies is a totally closed oven, like a microwave, and that gets much more complicated, and you should never have milchiks and fleishiks together in an oven. Even b'diavad, it might be a problem, because it's much more closed than your average oven, which has a vent. So that's the third area, which is a totally enclosed area, and that's more of an issue. Milchiks and fleishiks in a microwave is a big no-no. The same. Now we're talking about something we're talking about at the same time. Now let's talk about a situation where you want to have the question, which is Sarah Brocha's question. You want to have them one after the other. That's going to be the main body of the shiur today, is the issue of one after the other. So we're going to have to look at, are there any issues of contact, number one? Are there any issues of Recha, number two? Are there any issues of Zeya, number three? Because those are the three ways you're going to have a transfer of taste. If you have none of those three, so present to hate, right? So we said Recha means when they're in the oven together. So the only scenario which you're going to have a problem, Recha, is that they're in the oven together. So we're talking about one after the other, Recha is off the pitch. So we've taken Recha out. What about direct contact? So we said that there's a transfer of flavor from one to the other through direct contact of the milchiks to the fleishiks. Or if something is absorbed into the wall. Well, if I cook milchiks in my oven and some of the milchiks gets absorbed into the rack or into the wall of the oven, then I put fleishiks in and I put my fleishig pot down on top of the spot where the milchiks is absorbed, I might have a problem because it might absorb that milchiks which is there. So if there's actual residue there, you have a real problem. You're going to put your fleishig pot down on milchik residue. That's a no-no. Let's say there's no residue there, it's clean, but this question, there's something absorbed in there. So that's really like two pots touching, right? I have this dry rack, this dry pot touching. The dry pot is fleishig, the dry rack is milchig, but they're touching, there's no moisture there, so it's not going to be yasur b'dyavad. I will not tell you to do the chachila, so the best thing to do is put a piece of foil down, you're not going to have a problem. Good so far? So if a person uses the oven for milchigs, then they want to use the oven for fleishigs, or vice versa. I'm not saying when that's permitted or not permitted yet, we'll get to that. But I'm trying to address the potential problems. The reich is not going to be a problem because there's one after the other. Contact, there's no contact. See, if there's actual residue, there is contact. That's a problem. If there's no residue, there's no contact. The best way to guarantee there's not going to be any contact is by putting down a piece of foil, there'll be no contact. Okay, so far so good. Now, so the real issue comes to the halacha of zeil, right? The steam issue. That's where halacha becomes much more significant. Smell is only an issue if it's at the same time. Okay, but Chazal said any steam which comes out of the food has the status of the food. So if I use my oven for milchiks, and the steam comes out of the milchiks, dissipates throughout the oven, goes into the walls, according to some opinions, sits there on the walls on the outside even. It's not necessarily visible. Then I put in fleishigs into my oven, and steam comes out and mixes with that other steam which is there in the walls and on the walls, and now I have milk. I have basa b'cholov in my oven. And then it goes back, and then some of it's hanging out there in my oven, goes back into the food, my food is basa b'cholov, and it's just the rice to eat the food. So that's a real problem. So we have to address the problem of preventing the mixture of milchig steam and fleishig steam together. And that's really the real question. You want to discuss using the oven for one thing after the other. The real question is, how do you prevent the problem of milchig steam and fleishig steam meeting each other and creating a problem? So that's what we're going to try to address today. So this is all preamble till this point in time, and now we're going to actually say this year. Are you with me so far? Yeah? Nothing? Okay. So the best eitzah, I'm going to tell you the best way to do it, set up, and then we'll work from the chatchilas to the not best eitzah. The best eitzah, if you want to use an oven for both milchigs and fleishigs, so if you have a self-cleaning oven, life is very simple. Right, halacha allows you to use it for milchigs, run a self-cleaning cycle, and afterwards it's no longer milchigs. You can use it for parv, you can use it for fleishigs without a problem. So you have a self-cleaning oven, you can use it for milchigs, then you run through a cycle, which is the equivalent of kashering it. It's no longer milchig, use it for fleishigs, now run a cycle again, now it's no longer fleishigs, use it for milchigs. As long as you make sure you run that cycle in between, you're okay. So self-cleaning is a cleaning oven. If you ever get an option in your life, if you don't have one yet, you get an option of buying one, buy it. It makes life very much simple. I do want to point out that there's something called a continuous cleaning oven, which is not so common nowadays. This a continuous cleaning oven does not have that halacha, and it will not solve your problems. It might make problems even worse. So if you ever have an option of buying a continuous cleaning oven, do not buy a continuous cleaning oven. Do buy a self-cleaning oven. Okay, you do not have a self-cleaning oven, you're living in an apartment somewhere, you take whatever you get, the oven they give you is not a self-cleaning oven, or you move into your house and you're not holding me buying a new oven at this point in your life, you're davening that this one should break, I'll have to buy a new one, but it didn't happen yet, so meanwhile you're stuck with your old oven, which is not a self-cleaning oven, now what do you do? So, assuming that you do not have a self-cleaning oven, the best thing to do is to decide that your oven is either milchigs or fleishigs. Make a decision in your mind. I'm going to make my oven give it a status or designation of a fleishig oven, which means that I'm going. The decision normally would be: I usually cook fleishigs more often than milchigs, so my oven will be used for fleishigs. So if my oven is used for fleishigs, I can cook fleishigs in that oven, open. Don't worry about any steam because any steam which comes out is always fleishig steam. So put in fleishigs, comes out fleishig steam. Put in some more fleishigs. Again, fleishig steam, no problem. It's always fleishig, fleishig, fleishig. Right? So I use my oven for fleishigs and I use it uncovered. Or, if I'm a person who has a lot of milchigs, I will decide that my oven is going to be a milchig oven and I will use it for milchigs uncovered. Now, one day I realize I use it for fleishigs and it's right before Shuas and I need to make a cheesecake, which is milchig. Or I want to make something which is parv. So how do I use a fleishig oven for parv? How do I use a milchig oven for parv? How do I use a milchig oven for fleishigs? So, assuming that the oven is clean, which means the best way to assume the oven is clean is by cleaning it. Okay? Alright? Which means you can use fantastic, you don't have to use easy off. I'm not talking about being, clean out the oven is clean. Put down something on the racks, just for that there shouldn't be any direct contact. So I want to cook, I have, let's say, the example we're going to do, start with the fleishig oven. I want to bake in that oven something which is pariv or something which is milchik. If what I'm baking parv is dry, there's no problem. Because the whole problem is, remember, is steam. So, if I've been cooking fleishig things, a lot of steam, etc. There's all this steam all hanging out all over in the walls of the oven, etc. But how do I mistakenly get that back into my food? Well, I put the next thing in, it puts steam out, they mix together, and they come back into the food. Well, there's no steam, because what I'm cooking now is dry. So let's give a few examples. So let's say I want to bake challah. So I have a fleishig oven, and I want to bake challah to use for a milchig shel shudas and eat this, no problem, as long as the oven is clean.
Is that the point of cooking? Is getting all the
halacha recognizes the fact that there's minimal steam is not a problem. We're talking about a significant amount of steam, which means something which is liquid. That's a fair question.
Chicken.
We will try that. We might get there today. Okay. So I have a fleishig oven and I want to bake challah. So no problem as long as my oven is clean. Number one, there's no contact between milk and fleishig, my parv and the fleishig which is in the oven. Number two, right? So no recha because not together at the same time. Zeya, there's no zeya because the second item is not producing any zeya. So I can bake in my oven pariv. I can bake in my oven pariv and then use it with milchiks afterwards. So I can bake my challah in the oven even though the oven is a fleishig oven and I can use it afterwards with milchiks. We're going to attempt to do that. Okay. Now, let's... Yeah. You could do that too.
I'm saying the same
thing. Same thing, yeah. Now, let's say I want to, I'm going to give you a list of, a semi-list, because I don't have a total list, a semi-list of dry versus liquid. Let's say I want to make a liquid pariv. Okay? So now it's producing zeyev. So now what do I have to do? So there, if I want to make a liquid pariv, I have to make sure that it's clean. Put my foil down. And then I wait 24 hours. I do not have to kasher it. I wait 24 hours and use it for parv. Okay? So even if it's a liquid parv, I do not need to kasher it. All I need to do is clean it out and wait 24 hours. If it's a dry parv, I do not need to wait 24 hours. If it's a liquid parv, I need to wait 24 hours or I can kasher it. Okay? So I have not explained to you how to kasher a non-self-cleaning oven. Okay? I'm not giving you a list of what's called dry and what's called liquid. And B, I've not explained to you how to kasher a non-self-cleaning oven. So we need to address both of those points. I'm going to address both those points right now. So, and then we'll get to going from fleishigs to milchigs. We're dealing with fleishigs to parv, or milchigs to parv. Okay? How do you kasher a non-self-cleaning oven? So the first thing you need to do is you need to wait 24 hours. I'll take that back. If you're dealing from fleishigs to parv, you do not need to wait 24 hours. If you're dealing from fleishigs to milchigs, you must wait 24 hours before you kasher it. Not 24 hours after you use it, wait 24 hours and then kasher it. if you're using it from fleshix to pariv, you don't need to wait 24 hours. From fleshix to milchix, milchix to fleshix, you need to wait 24 hours from the time that you used it. It should be clean. Then you set it on the highest setting for an hour. Usually that's broil. So if you're going from fleshix to milchix, it's clean. You wait 24 hours, highest setting. Going from fleshix to pariv, it can be clean anytime during the 24 hours, as long as it has not been used in the 24 hours. If it's going from fleshix to pariv, so it's clean and highest setting for 24 hours. What did I say?
24 hours.
That's a long time. Highest setting for 1 hour. Yeah, that is correct. Thank you. There are some which suggest, yes, there are some which suggest that, and the best thing after 24 hours is to put a pot in there with water in it and let the water do its thing and put all that steam, and that'll be like the same way that's a form of kashering. Kashering is always the way it goes in is the way it comes out. So if you put a pot in there with water and let it boil its kishkas out, right, just boil all the water out, so that'd be an advantage also. That's not required, it is commendable. Okay, so this is how we're going to kasher from a fleshig oven to use it for pariv, or a fleshig oven to use for milchix. Now, we said you only need to do this if you're doing something which is a liquid. What is the definition of a liquid? So, this is where I got yelled at, but the last time I said this year, pizza is considered a solid. It's considered dry. It's not considered a liquid. We got it for this purpose. If you have it has to be a food stuff, a food item, which there's a significant amount of liquid, it'll produce steam. My wife tells me that lasagna, depending on how you make your lasagna could be something which is very liquidy. So I have to tell you that I don't spend too much time baking in the kitchen, so I have to believe her. But it could be, if you do it covered, it's not a problem. We're talking about doing it, if you want to do it open, so you want to go from fleshix to milchix, or fleshix to par, or even if there's a lot of liquid there, it's going to produce steam, it's going to be a problem. I have to tell you that I found that Rabbi Heinemann it adds a condition that the liquid is something which you want for the cooking process, as opposed to liquid which just goes off. Anything which is considered so your breads, your cakes, anything which is going to be covered. Even if you have something which is, for example, let's say you're going to have, a pie which is a two-layer pie. It has a top and it has a bottom, so it's a full cover. There's no vents for the steam, which I imagine you probably don't want to do that. But if you would have the halacha is the case where you made a meat pie. As long as there's a full layer of dough on top, it's considered dry for this purpose. Even though inside there's a lot of liquid, because there's a covering on top. So cake batter is considered dry for this purpose. What?
The vent
on top of the pie. Now you're going to have steam coming out. It's going to be a problem. Your arm's getting tired. I feel bad. I'll get to you in a minute. Okay? I just want to try and finish this thought. So anything which you're going to see, obviously a soup, obviously if there's water, there's simply not the water in there. Let's say you're making a lasagna, you didn't boil it first. Sometimes you boil it in there. So you stick the lasagna in there with all the liquid to boil it while at the same time you're baking it. So that's water, right? There's no water there. So that's going to be open, that's going to be a problem. Okay. I can't give an exhaustive list of dry versus liquid because I don't know what they make in the kitchen. Dry, most of your kugels are going to be considered dry. Cheesecake, usually, the way I understand the way cheesecake is made, it's usually considered something which is liquid. There's not the liquid in there. Chicken. So oil is not considered zeya for this purpose. So but if you're dealing with just plain oil, then that's only the fat which is there, that's not going to be considered a liquid issue. If you're talking, you're adding other liquids into there, you're making some type of a very lot of gravy with, you add some water and you add some other things into it, so then you would have a problem with your that being considered milk, considered Liquid, thank you. That's what I wanted to say. Yes? You will burn in Gehenna forever. What? How much? At 350. Okay. What?
I know very
rich people
have one microwave.
You can say you can't have one microwave.
I didn't say you can't have one microwave.
Everything steam in it, whatever, ovens, one oven.
Okay, I didn't get. Right now, we're dealing with the right way, the preferred way of doing it. I didn't say we're discussing on how bad the person is if they don't do that. We're not going to have enough time to tell you how many different levels of Gehenna you get, depending on how much you don't do.
What she can tell me. You are going to burn me this minute.
At what temperature? My wife wants to know what temperature is it going to be. Okay? Okay. So, now, I have my fleishig oven and I want to cook something in there which is milchik, and it doesn't need to be open. I can cook it covered. Not a problem. As long as there's not reicha, it's not the same time. No contact, it's clean. I cover the racks. So as long as it's clean, and there's no zeya coming out because it's covered, because then it's hate. So if I want to cook something there in my fleishig oven, which is milchik, and it's covered, I still don't have a problem. So if I want to cook something in my fleishig oven, which is dry, I don't have a problem. If I want to cook something in my fleishig oven, which is liquidy, but it's covered, also no problem. The only time you have an issue, I want to cook something in my fleishig oven, which is liquidy and it's open. So we said it's liquidy and it's open, and it is for pariv. You do not need. You can again, not self cleaning, right? So you can wait 24 hours or kasher it immediately and do it. If you want to cook something from in my fleishig oven, I need to transfer now to cook something which is milchik and it's liquidy, and I need to cook it uncovered. Then I need to do the full process of kashering, which is clean it out, 24 hours, kasher it at the highest setting for an hour, and then use it for milk. Yes? Is that clear? Yes.
What about double wrapping? If you double wrap it, you don't have to do any of this stuff?
The truth is, for this purpose, which I said covered, double wrapping is a form of covering, right?
Right.
It's even more covering, right? The advantage of double wrapping is that even if the for this purpose one covering is really enough.
Right.
The advantage of double wrapping is in case there's something on the rack itself. I've addressed that issue. Even if some moisture comes out and it touches the rack, I don't really need double wrapping for this purpose. It's an advantage. I don't really need to do that.
But do you need to clean the ovens if you're going to double
wrap it? Theoretically, not. Okay, so. Okay, so we've discussed fleishig oven to pariv, fleishig oven to milchik, fleishig oven to pariv, which is dry or liquid, milchik, which is dry or liquid, open and not open, uncovered and covered. You pretty much cover everything. I do want to point out that if you're going to be doing this from fleishigs to milchiks, you should not do it too often. Now, why is that? There's a discussion in halacha. Theoretically, if I don't eat hot food too often, so theoretically I could have one set of utensils, and I'll use them on Sunday, wait till Monday 24 hours, kasher them, and use them for the other thing. Fleishes on Sunday, milk on Tuesday, fleishes on Thursday, etc. Can you do that? So the Magen Avraham says you cannot do that because you're afraid you're going to forget to wait 24 hours. So the idea of going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, we're afraid you're going to forget to wait 24 hours, therefore it is discouraged, you should not do that. Now, when it comes to a self-cleaning oven, since you do not need to wait 24 hours, so that problem doesn't exist. What?
You have to self-clean
for
4 hours?
You can self-clean for an hour. Now, the self-clean... You don't need an hour of the self. So once you set it to the self-cleaning setting, within an hour it gets to the highest.
Right, but the self-cleaning setting takes an hour or however long it takes, but then it locks. You can't open the oven and do anything with it while it's
That's true. It takes about half an hour afterwards to unlock.
No, it takes like
you know, get a new one. I can tell you, you know, make a big sign: do not buy this type of self cleaning up. Okay. Okay. So this is, and if a person would have, again, the person would be starting with a milcha ga'oven because that's what they usually use. Going to fleishes would be the exact same thing. Okay, that is within the oven. Let's talk about the stove top for a little bit, because Zeya, interestingly enough, plays a role in the stove top also, or a range, you know, whatever the difference between the two of them are.
You have 3 minutes.
Your watch is wrong.
I have 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Make sure you get
to my group,
so that's really
no gay,
everyone.
Okay. Okay. So we'll get to my group. Thank you. Okay. So just stovetops. There's potentially two issues with obviously contact is an issue. There's no issue of reicha because it's totally open. So reicha is irrelevant. Contact is an issue. So you don't want to put your pots near too close to each other. You're cooking milk cakes in the back, fleishes in the front. All right. Splatters is not a good idea. If something's, you know, splatters out from your milchus to your fleishes, your fleishes to your milchus, obviously that can create a problem, and you have to ask your LOR to get a psak on that. Local Orthodox rabbi, yes. Okay. Okay. What about Zeya? So, theoretically, Zeya goes up. In general, steam doesn't go down. Right? Unless it's in an enclosed area, it hits the top, it might come back down, but otherwise it just dissipates. Within your kitchens, no problem. Two potential problems with Zeya. If I have a big pot and a small pot, so I have a big fleishes soup. I'm cooking, you know, 16 quarts of chicken soup in this big 16 quart pot, and I have this little, you know, cooking some milk for the baby, and it's right there, you know, and the steam is coming up, and it's right next to each other. They're both hot. Bam! The steam is spreading and hitting it right there. That's not a good idea. You shouldn't do that. So do not put small pots next. You want to put a gigantic pot of milk, you know, so the steam is the same level, both going out into the air, isn't it? Careful not to splatter one to the other. But you put a small one, as the steam escapes, it's going to be hitting the pot right next to it. So that's not a good idea. Try and keep a distance between the two of them. The other potential area where you have an issue of Zeya, some, if you have a stovetop where the stove is beneath the stovetop, the oven, thank you. Yeah, whatever you call that. The oven is beneath the stovetop, so it's venting out somewhere. Some of them vent to the back of your the stovetop. There's a little square thing over there, and that's where the Zeya, which is, if you're cooking something inside the oven which is fleishig, you're cooking something in the back burner which is milchig, you might have a problem of Zeya, fleishig of Zeya coming out and hitting the milchigs. So that's, you should be aware of. That's for stovetops. So I just want to, I'm running now. Sorry, I want to try and get to microwaves. Microwaves. So double wrap solves, even if it's not clean, if it's double wrapped, it will solve your problems. Okay? If you want to put something, so let's say a situation, your person's there's a non-kosher microwave, or there's a kosher microwave, which is milchigs or fleishigs. So if I want to put into that, even if it's not clean, and I don't have time to clean it right now, my person's working in some office, and there's a microwave there. If it's double wrapped, there will not be a problem. The double wrapping, I want to point out, it's referred in halacha that one of the wrappings should be hard. So you can bring it from home, some type of a container, which you want to put it in, and then you put another layer around it. Obviously do not use foil, right? Right? Except you want to see what happens if you do it. I can see that already. But it sparks very geschmack.
No, the newer ones will turn on.
Okay.
Really?
So saran wrap, you know, this, you know, something of that sort, which is what you use, or a bag, something of that sort. Now, the real issue is because you can't totally seal it, because it'll pop. And then you can really have a mess, halachically. I mean, besides practically, you have a mess halachically. So you don't want the contact, you want to limit the contact. So theoretically, as long as there's no moisture touching the two things at the same time, you're okay. Double wrapping is good. I saw one saver suggest even triple wrapping would be even nicer. Let's say I have a microwave at home and I want to make it from, I want to transfer from milk to fleishes to milk. Can I do that? So immersion has a tube of immersion holes that you could. Now I want to point out, to do that, first it has to be clean. Before you do anything, you want to transfer milk to fleishes by koshering it, it has to be clean. So you have to totally clean out the inside, number one. Number two, so what am I koshering? Am I koshering the surface, or am I koshering the contents which went into the walls? The walls will only absorb if the walls get hot. The walls don't get hot, it will never absorb. So how do I know if the walls in my microwave get hot or not? Microwave doesn't work, the walls don't get hot. The food gets hot, and the heat it then goes from, transfers from the food item to the walls. So different food items will transfer heat to the walls differently. A baked potato or a potato which you're baking will transfer heat to the walls at one speed, etc. Theoretically, what you could do is, if you know that your microwave is very large, etc., except for maybe the glass which is beneath it, which you could put a styrofoam tray on top of it, if the walls do not get hot, you don't need to kosher the walls. All right? So you put something in there over there, which, you know, as a test, put on the highest setting and let it go, you know, for a few minutes. Take it out and carefully touch the walls. Don't burn yourself. If none of the walls are hot, so you don't have to kosher the walls. All you have to do is make sure that it's clean, right? And there shouldn't be any direct contact between. So anytime, if you have a microwave at home, the best thing to do is always use a styrofoam tray under the food. Or a special glass, you know, whatever you're using. If I want to use it for milchiks, have a tray for milchiks and put it on that. Next time I want to use fleishiks, take that one out and use it. And again, assuming there was no heat and it's clean, the tray, you have two different trays, and you're good to go. So you could do that in your microwave and go theoretically from milchiks to fleishiks. Now, then this next step of kashering it, if it does get hot, to kasher it, what you have to do is you have to put in, it gets hot through steam. So the way you're going... What? Oh, so now, if you want to kasher it from milchiks to fleishiks, so we said before, you have to wait 24 hours. It has to be clean 24 hours. And then the way you kasher it is by putting a pot of water, a cup of water in there, and putting it on the highest setting and zap it until it creates steam all over there, and that'll kosher it. So you have to make sure it's clean, wait 24 hours, and then you put something in there which will generate a lot of steam. Hot water does that a very good job of creating a lot of steam. Put a nice sized cup of water, a bowl of water in there, and let it go, and that will kosher it out. That's, you want to go from milk to flesh, etc. You want to go milk to parv, you know, so you can do that without waiting 24 hours. So that once you get to that point, it's the same as an oven. I'm running through this a little bit quick. I'm hoping I'm clear. Yeah? Is that clear?
Yeah.
Yes. Any questions? I got 1 minute. Yes. Tova.
What's the difference between like a stovetop and a microwave? Like if you have stuff on the stovetop, do you have to make sure it's clean?
The only issue we have on the stovetop is the pot is touching the grate. So do you have to be worried about something on the grate?
Like,
Glass tops are a little more complicated because the glass that they use has not just only glass, there actually is like other types of clay in there which give it its ability to withstand heat, and they absorb flavors and they transfer one to the other. So the best thing always to do over there is make sure that it's dry when you put it on.
Even if you have like grates, not a glass top.
Whatever you have, if assuming that the area where it hit is clean, and there's not, you know, there wasn't actual residue there, it's clean. Marshall said you could. Rabbi Feinstein. Yes.
But let's say like you come to a hotel or something, you want to use the microwave. You're not sure if it's been used within 24 hours because.
So you can't kosher it, but it's just double wrap. Yeah. Atari, you had a question? No. Okay. Ladies, I hope we got it clear. I'll probably have to come back some other time in the future to clarify all the things that weren't correct. And I'm going to post this year, so if somebody wants to listen to it, it'll be posted.